Chapter 30. Time swallowed itself like a snake. Suddenly Icebreaker was not years or months from being ready, but weeks. Prickly with anticipation, Chiku visited the birthing chamber as often as her administrative workload allowed. While the lander was being prepared for the expedition, it had been crusted over with a dense plaque of scaffolding and pressurized support structures. Now most of that had been dismantled or swung away, leaving only a handful of vacuum-suited technicians still working on the final details. The 300-meter-long lander had been gutted and stuffed with enormous fuel tanks, giving the craft's clean lines a swollen, bee-stung look. Even a post-Chibaza engine needed fuel, and lots of it. Once in a while, from some hatch or service port, stuttered the hard blue flash of a welding torch or laser. Even there, they were down to the last few tweaks. Inside, too, the bulk of the work had been completed. In the tiny nucleus of the ship that would be filled with air and warmth, the skipover caskets had been installed and tested. After much deliberation, the final complement of crew would be 20. Chiku had quietly pushed for fewer, but there were limits to what she could achieve. The rest of the assembly thought 20 could not possibly be enough to handle the survey. Surely there should be room for soil specialists, botanists, geologists, oceanographers, and so on. Chiku made a show of agreeing with them in principle, but she also pointed out that a larger crew would require more skip-over equipment and supplies and more space to move around in when they came out of hibernation. These factors would mean trading fuel for life support volume, which would make the ship less nimble, thereby delaying their arrival. "I've run simulations until they're coming out of my ears," she said. "More than 20, and the mission parameters become unwieldy. 15 would be better, 12 ideal. We don't need specialists for every contingency. We are going on ahead to pave the way, not to establish a self-sustaining colony of our own." And all of that was true in its way. But a far more pressing consideration was that she did not want to lie to more volunteers than she absolutely had to. There was, too, a darker corollary. If she needed to start silencing people, the fewer the better. Prior to departure, secrecy remained paramount, and a ship-wide announcement of Icebreaker's existence had yet to be made. This had complicated the already delicate task of identifying and approaching possible crew members. Half of the candidates were straightforward selections. Daunting technical expertise had been required to develop, construct, and install the new engine, and the key figures working on the project were already sworn to secrecy. It made sense that those among them fit enough for skipover should be considered for the mission itself. Of those who were approached, 2/3 declined, which did not surprise Chiku in the least. The crew members would not be able to take their families with them on the decades-long expedition, so it was no easy burden to accept. The net was widened slightly, and slowly but surely sufficient volunteers agreed to the terms. One obvious candidate, in Chiku's eyes at least, posed a particular headache. Travertine knew the stakes. When the assembly finally dropped any pretense, among themselves at least, about the mission going ahead, and thereby authorized Chiku to inform Travertine and suggest that V join the expedition being readied, V simply nodded and countered with some minor demands of his own. A pardon, removal of the biomedical cuff, followed by a battery of emergency prolongation measures. V had to try, of course, but Travertine knew as well as Chiku did that the assembly would not go anywhere near that far. One afternoon, just under 50 days from launch, a black car approached the assembly building. Constables helped the aging scientist from the vehicle. V was accompanied by a bulb-headed chrome mannequin imported from somewhere else in the caravan. Originally, the robot had tailed Travertine clandestinely to prevent Ver from taking his own life. Now, the new robot accompanied Ver openly, an arm under Travertine's elbow to help Ver from the car and up the front steps. There was something almost kindly and touching in its ministrations, Chiku thought. She was waiting for Ver indoors, one hand clenching and unclenching, as if she had a tennis ball in her fist. She nodded as the party conveyed their guest into the lobby. "Thank you for coming, Travertine."
"I had a choice."
"Yes, and I hope my staff were clear on that." Chiku nodded to the constables. They were not needed now, although the robot could remain. "Come, I've reserved a room. Our discussion won't take long, and then you can be on your way."
"This is all very official. I thought we did all our best business in your kitchen."
Chiku smiled tightly.
"Those were the old days. It's a different world now.
You look well, by the way."
"And you're a very bad liar. I look like the thing I am. A monster walking the world. That's the point of me, isn't it? A dark warning to other potential sinners."
"You make too much of it. I see older-looking people whenever I'm in the community cause. Anyway, I didn't call you here for an argument."
"Another problem with your secret new toy?"
"Please," Chiku cautioned. "I really don't want to have you marched back to that car. It wouldn't look good for either of us." They reached a sealed chamber, two constables flanking the door. Chiku waved Travertine and the bulb-headed robot inside ahead of her. Her own warped reflection wobbled back at her from the robot's reflective head as she followed them into the room. Chiku gestured to a pair of seats.
"Have it help you sit down, then dismiss it." "Your own assembly provided that robot. Are you really that concerned about privacy?"
"You have no idea."
"Ah, so I was right. There is a problem with the ship." "That's a shame. I know how much you staked on it. Your life, your family, all sacrificed for this one thing."
The robot helped Travertine into his seat, then vishooed it away as one might an over-attentive servant.
"Go. Wait, outside."
"Wouldn't an exo be easier on your joints?" Chiku said, as the robot departed.
"They wouldn't let me have one. I think they were worried I'd turn it into a tunneling machine or something."
"Where would you go?"
"Exactly. Anyway, I don't really mind the robot. They used to worry about me hurting myself. Now they're more concerned about the lynch mobs and lunatics. People throw rocks at me sometimes. It's fascinating to be the focus of mass hatred. It's very grounding. Everyone should try."
"Anyone who hurts you would be punished to the full extent of the law," Chiku said, as if that would be a comfort to Travertine if V had been stoned to a pulp. "And there's nothing wrong with the ship, by the way."
"That's a shame."
"Really?"
"I've been thinking of it as my insurance. As long as you didn't know how to make the thing work properly, you needed me. That was why those people used to come, with their idiot questions. Why you agreed to adjust the cuff, to hold me at this level of decrepitude."
V nodded at the black ring around V's wrist, with its still blinking status light. "You're still valuable to me."
"I doubt it. You have your eager little experts now, and more time than you really deserve."
"To be honest, the work would bore you. When we launch Icebreaker and reveal ourselves to be in direct contravention of the Pemba Accord, all hell will break loose. There'll be serious consequences. It'll be the worst intra-caravan crisis since your trial. I believe the old political term is shitstorm. We could even lose our autonomy."
"And this is supposed to be encouraging?"
"I hope so. On the day Icebreaker launches and we reveal that we've built the new engine, we'll also terminate your punishment."
"Terminate," Travertine said. "What does that mean, exactly?"
"The cuff will be removed, or reprogrammed to work therapeutically, to correct some of the harm the years have already done. You'll stop aging and start improving each day." Travertine fell into a profoundly contemplative silence. We appeared to be gazing through dozens of meters of solid rock at something located outside Zanzibar. The moment stretched uncomfortably. Chiku dared not speak.
"What's the catch?"
Travertine said, eventually.
"You have to volunteer for the mission," Chiku said. "I need you anyway, but you'll benefit too. On the ship, you'll be isolated from the inevitable political repercussions." "What about the reversal therapies I bargained for? How do they fit in?"
"They don't," Chiku said simply. "We'll carry a single physician with us, Dr. Aziba. You know him. There'll also be a medical robot and a small surgical suite for emergencies. If any of us get seriously ill, we'll be put back into Skipova until we're reunited with the main caravan. That's the best we can hope for."
"But aren't your crew going into Skipova from the moment of departure?"
"Once we've cleared Zanzibar and run some engine tests."
"So basically, you're offering me nothing. The calf will have no effect in Skipova. So when I wake up at the other end of the journey, I'll be exactly the way I am now."
"Except the calf won't be making you any worse. Beyond that, you'll have the promise of an official pardon and all the reversal therapies we can throw at you when the caravan arrives, which will be about 10 years after we get to Crucible." Chiku took a deep breath, convinced she had only this one chance to make her case. "This is the best I can do. There isn't time between now and the launch date to put you through any useful therapy. It'll be difficult enough to prepare you for Skipova. I wish I could give you everything you want, everything you deserve, but I can't. I still need you on Icebreaker. I can't begin to tell you how much I need you on that ship."
Travertine leaned towards her.
"What do you know that no one else does? What brought you here? What are you not telling everyone?"
"I just need you on that ship.
You love your children. How old are they now?"
Chiku had to think for a second. "Mpozi is 18. Ndege a year older.
So, they're young people now, entering adulthood. You'll be taking them with you, right?"
"No. It'll be better for them if they stay here. With Noah."
"And if you could take all three of them, if you could persuade them or force them?"
"I wouldn't."
"Whatever's driving you. You've already put it before your marriage. Now you're ready to step away from your children as well?"
"It's not like that. If there was some other way."
"But there isn't."
"No."
Travertine nodded slowly.
"Tell me one thing. We'll all be revealed once we're on the ship and away from Zanzibar."
"I don't know. I honestly don't know what we'll find until we get there."
"That's nonsense. We all know what we'll find. Haven't you been to the anticipation parks? They even let the horror like me walk around those. What don't we already know about Crucible?"
"Everything," Chiku said. And on that single word, perhaps the most important of her life, balanced almost more than she could begin to grasp. Not just Zanzibar, not just holoships and caravans, but the fates of worlds and civilizations, more than love and death. Travertine moved to raise herself from the seat, then winced.
"I'll need the robot, I'm afraid."
Chiku nodded, but instead of summoning the machine, she moved to assist her friend.
"This decision I'm asking you to make. When can I expect your answer?" "Silly you, Chiku. You already have it."